Good morning, Colorado, and welcome to A Public Affair. My name is Tish Buford. I am your host this morning. In studio, we have the wonderful attorneys from the Novo Law Firm joining us today. We have Bryce and Aaron. They are immigration advocacy and civil rights attorneys here in Denver, and we're going to be talking about the immigration crisis in Denver, the displacement of immigrants in our city, and what they're doing to help those that are entangled in the legal system and are currently residing in sanctuary. And we'll be talking about some other things pertaining to immigrant laws and immigrant issues here in Denver and throughout the country. So I want to welcome Bryce and Aaron to the studio. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Tish.
Good morning.
And we're so happy to have you here, and thank you for joining us. Now, before we get into the immigration and sanctuary crisis here in Denver, why don't you guys tell us a little bit about yourselves and how you guys created Novo Law. Bryce, why don't you go and tell us a little bit about your background and how you met Aaron and how you guys merged.
Yeah, so both Aaron and I are practitioners, and we were practicing in immigration in the area, and it's kind of a small community, and we had several run-ins, and we quickly recognized that we had a lot in common when it came to what our visions and goals were, and so we joined forces and created something that we think is pretty special, which is an advocacy-first law firm. Novo, as a name, kind of reflects that. It's new in Latin, and it's kind of a new way that we want to practice, and we don't want to be the stale kind of old law firm. We want to be new, and we want to reflect the values and the advocacy that we really hold dear.
Absolutely. And Aaron, how did you come to meet Bryson? What made you decide to merge your law practices together?
We basically had a synergy that I couldn't find anywhere else that I guess I would just echo what Bryce had said, that it is a small community. We ran into each other a couple of times at various functions. We kind of figured out that each other had a very similar take on the law and what we wanted to do with it and how we wanted to specifically represent and advocate for this particular community. And then we recognized in each other that the other had something that we lacked. Bryce has a compelling a grasp on the immigration law and the Immigration and Nationality Act that really I have not seen anywhere. I think he has committed the entirety of the act and the regulations to memory. And I probably just bring a little bit more of a humor. Just kidding.
And humor is important.
Right. I bring in a little bit more of a business perspective as well as kind of a bigger picture, how to effectuate some of our grander goals.
Well, that's awesome. Now, how long have you guys been in practice as Novo?
So Novo's been around for about a year now.
Okay, so you guys are really new.
That's right.
Okay. And
true to the name.
In Greek, gotcha. And how many clients are you helping right now?
At any given time, we have between 600 and 800 active cases.
And do you guys have any other associates or other attorneys or junior associates working with you?
Yes, we have. At the moment, we have 5 other attorneys, 4 are full-time associates. And one is of counsel that works for us part time.
Okay, and that's very impressive. Well, the concept of just wanting to help and focus on immigrant law, criminal law, is splendid. Is there any other type of law that you guys specialize in outside of immigration law?
Yeah, so generally we like to think of ourselves as an immigrant rights law firm. So we take the client as a whole and we look at how the law impacts that individual. And that can be civil rights related, it can be immigration law specific, it can be criminal law or family law. And so those different areas and how that impacts the immigrant in a special way because of that individual's immigration status.
Gotcha. Now, when it comes to the immigrant population here in Denver, it is continually been increasing as it is all over the country. But where are you guys seeing the highest concentration of that in the metro area?
Well, we see quite a bit of growth throughout throughout the metro area, really. What's okay. I think there's an interesting overlay when it comes to questions as to the socioeconomics of the Denver metro area and how oftentimes people are being pushed further south and further north in areas that for people that generally service the city and have service jobs for the city, they're being pushed further and further out. So we are receiving clients that are coming further and further outside of the Denver metro area because the cost of living is increasing so much.
Absolutely. And because of that, that is increasing displacement of people who cannot afford to live in the metro area. Now, because of the economic disproportionate issues that we have here, it is refreshing to hear that you guys are doing pro bono work, and I'm assuming you guys are working on a sliding scale for because of customers that have little or no means or are, you know, impoverished or indigent.
Yeah, so we are we generally have quite a bit of active pro bono cases at a given time. So much so that the staff generally, when we take on another one, says, "Oh, another pro bono one." But it's what we do, pro bono, low bono. We try to work with people the best way that we can. If an individual qualifies for a type of relief or defense, and really the sole issue is how much they make, and that's the determining factor between whether or not they get to stay in this country and stay with their family, that shouldn't be the primary consideration.
Agreed. That is why I was so excited to have you guys on, because you're practicing law with practical values in place. And it's not based on someone's income, because everyone deserves, you know, legal and fair and competent representation. But unfortunately, in this country, the type of legal representation and quality is, you know, dependent on the size of your income.
Right.
Yeah, so it's indicative of that. And that is such a cataclysmic disparity for some people. They deserve good representation but can't afford it.
Right. Well, and what's interesting with that, if you look, oftentimes there's this saying that, you know, we have in Spanish, which is lo barato sale caro, which is generally that the less you pay, the cheaper that it is, the more money it costs later on to actually resolve that. You know, we see that quite a bit with you know, so-called notarios that often prey on that same class of clientele that really can't afford those services, so they're offering a cheaper alternative, which is not truly an alternative.
Right.
And so it's just because they can't afford that doesn't mean they shouldn't have access to good legal services.
Fair enough. And Aaron, did you want to add something to that?
Well, I guess just with respect to the just with respect to working with a lot of pro bono, taking on a lot of pro bono clients, we work with a lot of the local nonprofits, specifically like CERC and REMAIN, in taking referrals from those nonprofits because they have a much better ability to evaluate cases, to evaluate individuals, to qualify people. And then if, you know, at the same time, if they make a determination that this is a case that, you know, that warrants, that requires representation, we will always eagerly accept those.
And again, your service and your work is invaluable. And now I know you guys service many, many clients, but you are also the legal representation for Jeanette Vizguera. Did I say that right?
You did. Jeanette Vizguera. Yeah.
I was afraid I was going to butcher that. And of course, many of you know her as one of Time's 2017 most influential people. And she is currently in sanctuary right now, and you guys are overseeing her legal representation. Are you at liberty to discuss what is going on with her case?
To an extent, we are.
Okay. Can you give us an update on what's going on with her?
Yeah. So as you'd mentioned, she is now once again in sanctuary. And, you know, truly, we are so motivated by Jeanette's story. And, you know, I wish every one of your listeners could have a chance to actually sit down and meet and speak with her, because she is such a true advocate in trying to help others. And we believe that in part based on that, she's receiving additional and unfair scrutiny in the way that her case is being handled by immigration. So the way we're handling cases like this, which are inherently very difficult cases, individuals seek sanctuary when oftentimes there's not a lot of other recourse. And so we have to look and say, okay, well, it's time for some creative lawyering. We need to look and see, okay, analyze this beyond what your average case would entail and think outside the box. And that's what we're doing. We have several plans that are moving forward on that. But truly what I can say is we do strongly believe in analyzing her case that the government is essentially trying to deport her without proper due process, that there's a violation of her rights going on.
All right. And are you guys making any progress with proving and vetting that out, Aaron?
Well, that's kind of a complicated question. Originally there were a lot of things that we were basically planning on filing an action in federal court with respect to a U visa that she had pending. We've changed directions on that due to some recent developments with her case. So now we're looking at going back to sort of attacking the underlying deportation order from 2011, I think. So, but yes, in essence, going back to reopen and review the process by which she received a deportation order and calling out the errors and the injustices as they occurred.
Absolutely. And for those who are not familiar with her story, just real briefly, Bryce, can you give us a little backstory on how we got here today
with Jeanette? Yeah, Jeanette is a mother. She's a grandmother, and she was in this country. She was here living and working and providing for herself and for her family. And due to incidences such as traffic stops, which lead to further inquiry as to an individual's immigration status. This was at that time. One thing led to another, and she was essentially placed in custody. Based on that, that led to her being put in removal proceedings, and in those removal proceedings, putting forth a defense. And I would note that during that process, she was never deported. Okay, she was never issued a deportation order by an immigration judge, which is interesting because ICE right now is acting as if she had a valid deportation order against her. An immigration judge can issue number of orders, granting forms of relief, a deportation order, or voluntary departure, which is not a deportation order. An individual can leave the country under that voluntary departure, and it is not deportation. I'm repeating myself because it's a very interesting point here. The government is trying to enact and carry out a deportation order that simply does not exist.
I don't think a lot of people know that.
We didn't either.
Yeah, so upon analyzing it further, we're like, holy smokes, this is what's actually happening. The government's actually trying to do this. The more shocking aspect of it as well is convincing the government that they're going against the law and that even if they recognize it, that they still can at times. So the government puts in place, okay, well, you know what? The time to make that argument was several years ago. You had a period of 30 days to challenge that, and you didn't. So now the challenge is essentially gone, is their argument. And so that seems pretty unfair to an individual whose due process rights are being violated when they're trying to enforce a deportation order that doesn't actually exist. And the consequences that come with that are very extreme. We're talking about family separation, hardships, traumas, etc. So it's kind of a little bit of a labyrinth here because you can have the law on your side when it comes to what did happen. The facts can support that, but actually getting the government to change their course of action and convince them of that is a separate beast.
You guys are listening to KGNU Community Radio. I am your host, Tish Buford. You're listening to A Public Affair. And we have two wonderful gentlemen in the studio this morning with us from Novo Law. We have Bryce Downer and we have Aaron Ellenoff. So there was no initial deportation order. She got stopped on a traffic, citation. Did she ever actually go to traffic court?
I believe so, yes. So okay. That was resolved, which is also an interesting question here. You have many listeners, I'm sure, that say, well, individuals that are in this country and they do this, they need to go through the proper process. Well, for your average individual, the proper process is going to traffic court and then going back home and going back to work.
Exactly.
But for other individuals such as Jeanette, it's a very different process. Instead of just paying the ticket or paying the fine as you would online or via check, this means now oftentimes a detention. Your family members not knowing where you are and how long you will be detained, a later release on bond from the detention center, and then being put in removal proceedings that can last a matter of months to a few years, depending on your situation, and fighting for your lives and fighting for your family that whole time.
Wow. So since 2011, because of a traffic stop, she has been in this endless labyrinth and cycle of threat of deportation, sanctuary, out, and then back in sanctuary.
Right, and it truly even predates 2011.
Right. The traffic stop was in 2009, I think.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so we're dealing with an individual who has been constantly under the threat of removal.
For 10 years.
There are times when I have a stressful day. Generally not a stressful 10 years of my life where I'm constantly worried about my life and liberty. And so what's fascinating about Jeanette is that pressure, but still being incredibly active for others. I think it requires a special soul to really be looking out for others, even when the focus and spotlight is so much on you and your problems. And knowing that the louder you speak up for others, the more attention it brings to your own problems.
And it sounds like to me, that's the last thing that the government wants. They don't want the dirty laundry aired out in the general public. So to me, and this is just my opinion, I'm not a lawyer, but it seems like they are indirectly trying to send a message. Don't speak up. Don't advocate. Toe the line and we'll get to you. And we may or may not handle your case in an expedient fashion. And we may or may not handle it the way it should be handled.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Truthfully, I think that those in power generally are very fearful of the populace standing up and, you know, being united. You look at like the attack on like organized like unions, labor unions, organizations, things like that. It's the same thing. People joining together. They'd rather deal with individuals in the shadows, one on one, have them stay quiet. You know, if we look at the recognition Jeanette has received, specifically, as you mentioned, by Time Magazine, one of the 100 most influential people of 2017. Influential, yes. But that doesn't necessarily mean for the government's perspective that is a positive influence for what they view. They're viewing this as, okay, you're drawing attention to issues that we don't really want to discuss.
Right. And issues that have been ongoing even before Jeanette became well-known and a world icon. And usually people don't like doing their laundry in public. But they don't want to discuss what's soiling the laundry either.
Right.
So they really want to, they don't really want you to know what it's going to take to get it cleaned. Aaron, what do we do about this endless cycle of apparent disrespect, disengagement, and somewhat governmental and social bullying of people that can't defend themselves? We have wonderful gentlemen like you and other entities that are coming to their rescue, but they're few and far between.
I think that's exactly what we need to do is work towards 100% representation in immigration matters. That, you know, the studies have shown that individuals who are represented in removal proceedings or even in affirmative cases before the immigration service are, I believe their chances of success are increased by 60%. Simply by having an attorney involved. So that's number one. That's a key thing. The government, as the law stands right now, the government states that, or the law states that you are entitled, you do have a right to an attorney, but not at a government expense, which means that unlike criminal proceedings, immigration proceedings are not criminal. They are civil proceedings,
okay.
Which means you do have certain due process rights, but they are more limited by
comparison. Did you just wink when you said not criminal? Because it feels an awful lot like the consequences are so severe, but it's not. It's civil.
Right. Well, somebody said recently that we're basically litigating, you know, capital cases in a traffic court setting, and that's what it feels like. Litigating a traffic, what the government treats as very much on a traffic citation level, as far as, you know, how much they're concerned about the rights of the individual respondent, and yet the client sitting next to you is legitimately fearful of going back to their country. We are having them testify about threats and attacks on their families and themselves based on very specific recollections, vivid descriptions. And yet the government can be extremely dismissive of these facts. And then we go back to the fact that a lot of these people are trying to work through this process without representation. It's not as though they can just pay a fine and move on. It's they are fighting for their lives.
Literally
fighting for their lives.
And right. And the comparison that comes to my mind is someone can go out and, you know, commit a heinous crime, maybe even kill a person, but they will get legal representation.
They get a public defender. Yep.
And someone gets pulled over for a traffic violation, and because they're undocumented, they are treated far worse, and they don't get due process or a public defender, which I think would be so appropriate to have one.
Oh, absolutely. And then, you know, the fact that even questions of an individual's immigration or citizenship status, you know, that there's even an inquiry into that at the time of a traffic stop. It's mm-hmm. what really, for what purpose? You know, what social benefit or what social good is there to really have law enforcers that are out there monitoring for traffic infractions? They should look after traffic infractions and without necessarily inquiring into individual status. And now things have changed in that since the time that this started, mm-hmm. but you know, law enforcement officers still have quite a bit of discretion in the way they handle cases.
And that discretion is apparently unlimited in some cases.
Well, if you want to talk about unlimited discretion, let's get back to immigration. because there's so much discretion that it's extended to the immigration judges and ICE, Border Patrol, Border Protection, consular officers. There's the concept of, you know, consular unreviewability, which means you can't even challenge really the decisions that they come to. It really is very different from what most people would expect. And, you know, this morning was at the Immigration Detention Center fighting for one of our clients. And an individual was there before we got there, and he did not speak English, and the judge has an interpreter that's there for the benefit of the judge. Let's recognize who that interpreter is really there for. It's for the judge. How do we know this? Well, because she says, here's your application, fill this out for asylum. And he says, but I don't read English. And she says, well, good luck to you, sir. Hopefully you'll find someone that can help you understand this and really provide the correct answers to your one-shot form of relief.
And in that moment, how much would it cost the city of Denver or Aurora to have a Spanish translator to help someone fill out a form that's going to save their life?
Right, so that's a fantastic question, because during the actual court hearing, there was, but the moment that individual is no longer before the judge and he's there or she's there to fill it out on their own, they truly are on their own. So the cost of that, there have been many studies done, which is where individuals receive legal orientation or some sort of know your rights, just any information as to how to proceed in their case, the cases proceed much faster and much more efficiently. At times, this has been viewed as a net savings to the government. So one could argue that in situations such as this, that they're likely that the cost wouldn't be egregious, that it wouldn't be too much, that there would be some sort of savings to the court in long term by offering some sort of interpreting services.
Well, it appears to me that they are, you know, indirectly hoping, well, you know, if you can't speak or read English, we're kind of counting on that because we don't want to put you, you know, through the taxpayer process. We don't want to be bothered with this. That's what it feels like.
You know, this is reminding me quite a bit of Trump's latest proposal for immigration, of who are the type of people that he's trying to bring to this country, and who are the people that he does not necessarily want to be in the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hope I'm not saying anything too inflammatory, but his own words, you know, he's talking about people from Norway. You know, what are some of the commonalities
of European
there?
European descent. Yes.
We're talking about individuals that high educations, speak English fluently. I mean, these are things that he has said himself. So it's par for the course, I would say.
It's dog whistling. Okay. And basically what they're saying is, if you don't look like me, not quite sure if I want you around. And so it's classism, it's underlying racism, it's race profiling, and it's sad. And a lot of people don't want to deal with this. It's like, well, you know, she didn't have a license, they weren't born here, so, well, whatever happens, happens.
Well, which goes back to just the history of immigration law in the United States and, you know, beginning with such acts as like the Chinese Exclusion Act, you know, and then everything since then. It's that immigration has been viewed as who do we want to keep out, and that assuming that you don't fit that class of people we don't want in, you're more than welcome to come to the United States.
Absolutely. So it's institutionalized classism, socialism, you know, and racial profiling. So it's like, come to our land and bring your masses. But as long as they are, you know, of a certain economic status, you know, we'll take them on. Also, if they're a certain type of race, we'll take them on and open and welcome them with open arms.
Right.
But this country was based on bringing in all men and women and children who want to come to the land of the free and seek liberty and freedom.
Well, and let's be very clear that there is, you know, before individuals want to say, well, you know, they knew that they'd be in violation of laws and, you know, these are some of the consequences that would happen. You know, there are a lot of innocents that suffer throughout this process, family members. But there's also clear mixed messaging and mixed signals from the government and from our economy when it comes to attracting individuals to come to the United States. You know, on one hand, there's a stop sign, which is the American laws that says don't come in. And then the other, you have agriculture industry, you have construction, you have a whole sort of service industries that say green light, vacancy, the more the merrier, please come in.
Well, they are dependent on these immigrant workers.
Absolutely. So they're sitting in the mix. The mixed message.
Exactly. You hear on one end, stop. The other end, you hear, come. We've already got a job for you. We've got a place for you to live. We need you and we love you until we no longer need you.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, guys, we're going to have to end it there. This could go on for another half hour.
Oh, geez.
Oh, wow.
This was a fascinating conversation. I would love to have you guys back.
Yeah, we would love to be back. I can't believe it went by so quickly.
Absolutely. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up today. And just if you guys could give me, each of you, just a quick 5-second roundup. What would you like to share with our audience today before we go?
First and foremost, you know, we just appreciate everyone's support that throughout Denver. Denver has really stood up to try to help immigrants and their families and in volunteering with nonprofit organizations. So we would encourage those to those that are interested to still reach out. If you're looking for a way to volunteer and serve, you can contact our office. We can put you in touch with several organizations that would be willing to receive your volunteer work.
Okay, and how would they reach you guys?
So they can call us at our number. It's 303-335-0250, or they can email me or Aaron. It's Bryce, B-R-Y-C-E, at novo-legal.com, and the same for Aaron.
Okay, all right, and real quickly, in 5 seconds, what would you like to share with us, Aaron, going out today?
Yeah, I guess I think Denver and Colorado in general should just continue its love of immigrants and continue to make, we all need to keep making ourselves aware of the problem and get involved, show up at these rallies, show up at these marches and apply some pressure. If you think something's not right, apply some pressure, call your representatives, call the governor's office, make those issues known.
Thank you, Bryce Downer and Aaron Ellenoff. I've been your host, Tish Buford. We appreciate your time and attention. Have a wonderful day and always stay ready and always stay engaged. Thank you.